This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Acuron Corn Herbicide from Syngenta, which delivers 5 to 15 more bushels an acre than with any other herbicide. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials.
Well, it looked like Christmas across the board today with a lot of green and a little red. And Christmas may have come early with China possibly in the market to buy. So what could be in their sleigh?
Live from Sparkle City, USA, via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, it's Darren Hudson from Texas Tech University. And right after the news, Varsity Joe Vaklovic from Standard Grain swings through. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now in for the nomadic Chip Flory from U.S. Farm Report and a fashion runway near you, Tyne Morgan.
Thank you, Davis.
Yes.
You know, I think that we should just go ahead and tell Chip to take the rest of the year off.
You think?
Yeah. I mean, it's not every day that China's in the market to possibly buy ethanol.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's a coincidence that he took a vacation. And now they have an appetite all of a sudden? That's not a coincidence.
I wish that I remember who it was. Someone tweeted out, oh, what do you know? You know, Chip's out of the office. Markets are up. There may be something to that.
It's a trend, definitely.
I mean, so.
I know we need more than one day of data to classify this as a trend, but I'm just going to go ahead and say it's a trend.
Well, it's like 2-3 days in a row now. I mean, I think we're good. It's
Chip
just
who?
All going to be up from here.
I agree. 2019, the December to remember, right?
Hey, let me throw this out there. I don't know how you feel about it. Are you taking phone calls today? Will you and Darren Hudson from Texas Tech take a phone call if someone has a question? Maybe not.
I mean, I'm technically a millennial, so I prefer a text message.
Okay. Well, try to send a text to 855-4-TALK-AG. Or
yes,
dial
we'll
that phone.
Calls.
Dial that phone, 855-482-5524. Or, of course, you can tweet at us at hashtag AgriTalk. That's hashtag AgriTalk. AgriCat is standing by to take your tweets, and we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, we would, because Darren, Texas Tech University, but he's well-versed on a lot of topics. We'll talk a little bit about cotton, of course, but he's been studying China for quite some time. So, how realistically is it that we'll see these big buys from China? I mean, it looks like some meat's there. It looks like it could happen, but from an economic standpoint, does he think it's reality? So, but there was so much more in the news today, and like I said, we saw a lot of green on the board, Davis, but why?
Well, let's start with wheat, where futures posted a solid performance in today's trade, with winter wheat futures leading gains. Traders are watching to see if March SRW futures can hold yesterday's six-month peak. Rumors that Chinese importers are eyeing U.S. wheat gave markets a boost, despite the fact it is unclear if China's promised ag purchases as part of a Phase 1 trade accord will include wheat. Dryness in the Black Sea region, Argentina, and Australia are also concerning to the market, adding support today. March hard red futures were a nickel higher at 467. March soft red futures up 6.5 to 556.25. March spring wheat was 1.75 cents higher at 538.75 tine. I didn't necessarily see wheat in the conversation about Phase 1 ag purchases. Have you seen anything about wheat specifically in there?
No, but I mean, in talking of any analysts, it sounds like they are at least pricing some wheat right now. And so that's promising. But there's a lot that we didn't see in this Phase 1 deal that in order to get to the 40 billion or, you know, however many that the close to that $50 billion mark that they say it's going to have to come from a lot of other goods. And you know what? Wheat, we have plenty of it. And it's on sale, Davis. Come get it.
Well, and if we can benefit the entire ag sector, you know, we get pretty focused on corn and beans and wheat, cattle and hogs here. But people are growing all kinds of ag products that maybe China could be looking to take advantage of. I think you're exactly
right. And Davis,
right,
I will say this. When I was at the White House a year ago, they told me, quit focusing so much on soybeans. This isn't about soybeans.
Nope.
So this is such a bigger conversation. But, of course, the media fixated right now on that soybean headline. Sure. And it's going to come in a lot of different forms.
I wonder if Darren Hudson has any thoughts on this. Friday's phase one announcement has continued to benefit corn futures this week, and it has been reported China is considering purchases of U.S. ethanol. That along with expected purchases of corn and corn products. But the March contract's failure to top resistance around 391 was considered a negative for futures. Support was gained from some light short covering as funds are reportedly buying corn. Expectations USMCA will soon be ratified also encouraged market bulls. March corn futures were 2 cents higher at 390. May corn gained 1¾ cents, 396.5. December 2020 corn closed at 402 even. That's up 1¾ cents on the day. Soybeans posted the 9th gain in 10 sessions today on elation over the deal with China and on some related short covering. Futures were also supported by word the biodiesel tax incentive will be extended into 2020 under the new spending bill working its way through Congress. Also, higher Argentine export taxes have gone into effect, sending some buyers to the U.S. for supplies. January bean futures 6¾ cents higher, 928¾. July beans gained 4 cents to 966. November 2020 beans closed at 966.5. That's up 4 cents on the day. You know, maybe too focused on soybeans when we're thinking about China, but doggone it, they've had a good run here, Tyne.
Yeah, and that tax extender bill. I mean, we talked to Jim Wiesmeyer this morning. Yeah. He said the naysayers, even yesterday with that biodiesel tax incentive, were saying there's no way this is going to be in this budget deal. And lo and behold, yeah. It is through 2022.
You know? Yep. Well, cattle futures were unable to hold on to early gains and ended the day mixed. Higher wholesale beef values added some support, but shortened upcoming holiday kill schedules are expected to crimp near-term demand for cattle, adding light pressure to nearbys. And I didn't have these markets officially closed out like the rest, so I'm going to read what I have here. I've got February down 95 cents at 126.30, and the April contract live cattle down 60 cents to 127.32.5, and January feeders off a dime 145.15. And finally, on the snout side, lean hog futures were mixed on the close with pressure on nearbys stemming from the premium futures hold of the cash market. Meanwhile, the market remains poised to seize on potentially higher Chinese demand for U.S. pork. And again, these are a little bit delayed, not sure why. But I've got February hogs down 65 cents, 69.85. April hogs down a nickel, 77.40. But you get further into those back month contracts, and they were higher on the day. Joe Vaklevic from Standard Grain standing by from Music City, USA. How you doing, Varsity Joe?
I'm good. What's going on?
Dude, we've got green on the screen here. As Tyne said, green with just a sprinkling of red. Is that red there for artistic purposes? I'm looking mostly at live cattle here. Shortened kill runs coming up. Is it giving everyone the creeps?
I'm not sure. I don't think the markets are reacting as if we have a trade deal. Oh. I think they're reacting like we could maybe have a trade deal. I mean, if China was really going to buy $40 billion in ag goods in a year, beans would have been limit up like the last 2 days, and they're not. It's short covering. The funds are still short a ton of beans. They're still short corn. I think they're peeling out of it. I think that they're nervous because they're short and there could be a trade deal. I just think this thing's quite a ways away from being finalized.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so soybeans up around 5 to 6 cents on the day. It sounds like you feel like confirmation of a deal or maybe just some flat sales would inject quite a bit more strength into this bean market.
Yeah, definitely would. I mean, China hasn't said that they're going to buy $40 billion of anything. And the last we heard from China regarding any sort of firm commitment to purchases was that they don't want firm commitments. What they want is to buy things that are priced competitively. They don't want to distort their local markets. Right. So we haven't heard this sort of rhetoric at all from China. So you got two totally different stories out there.
Yeah, that's some great perspective from Joe Vaklevic from Standard Grain. Hey, have a great holiday season, my brother.
Yep, see you guys.
All right, I'll throw it back over to Tyne Morgan.
Thanks so much, Davis. Well, coming up, Darren Hudson of Texas Tech University, maybe he could provide some more clarity around China. I mean, realistically, what could they buy and what would that mix look like? We'll talk to Darren Hudson after the break.
Today, I'm joined by Steve Gomm, corn herbicide product lead with Syngenta. Steve, we can all agree that saving money is great, but sometimes the appeal of saving money up front baits us into spending more in the long run and jeopardizing farm finances. How can growers avoid falling into that trap? And let's talk about it as it pertains to corn herbicides.
Sure. We've seen and we've had customers even tell us that paying a little more up front for a quality herbicide can save you money in the long run. And that seemed to be even more apparent during the tough season we just had, as you know. And everybody knows the most expensive herbicide you can buy is the one that doesn't work.
Yeah. Steve, what are some of the problems growers can run into if they skimp on their herbicides?
Yeah, there's both short-term and long-term issues. Short-term, you can have shorter residual control, which can cause weed escapes, and that can lead to more money being spent on other treatments or rescue treatments. And you get reduced yield with early season weeds competing with the crop for water, sunlight, and nutrients. And then longer-term, you can build up that seed bank, and you can also increase your chance of developing resistance, and these can really cost you down the road.
Yeah, no doubt about it. That's a lot to consider, though. What corn herbicides do you recommend growers consider for 2020?
Yeah, good question, Chip. Only Acuron corn herbicide unlocks your full yield potential because it controls those tough weeds other products are missing. And when you see it used at pre-emergent application at full label rates, Acuron's going to help growers find 5 to 15 more bushels an acre than any other herbicide. So that means even though you're investing a little more up front, you're going to get that back plus some more at the end of the season.
What is it about Acuron, Steve, that makes it have such a positive impact on yield?
Well, it starts with the unique active ingredient, bicyclopyrone, which when combined with the other three active ingredients, it just delivers a higher level of weed control and more often. Yeah. And better weed control leads to higher yield potential.
Right. Very cool. Thank you so much, Steve. That was Steve Gomm, corn herbicide product lead with Syngenta, talking to us about how it's worth spending a little more up front on an effective corn herbicide like Acuron. Just a reminder to always read and follow label instructions. Acuron is a restricted use pesticide.
No matter what you do, you're always raising the bar, trying to do better than ever. Dalaro fungicide for corn and soybeans can help you get the edge you're looking for. Dalaro has a broader spectrum of disease control and best-in-class dual mode of action residual. Plus, it improves plant health, so your top-performing hybrids and varieties will have the protection they need to help you achieve your personal best yields. Dalaro from Bayer. Keep raising the bar. Always read and follow label instructions.
Sullivan Auctioneers is holding their annual year-end no-reserve dealer and farmer auction Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, December 19th, 20th, and 21st in Hamilton-on-the-Loy. It all starts at 9 a.m. each day. This is one of the largest and highest quality auctions they've ever conducted, with over 50 combines, 60 tractors, planters, sprayers, tillage equipment, hay equipment, construction equipment, and much more. No on-site buyer's premium. Live internet bidding is available on all major items, and every item sells absolute with no reserve. Go to SullivanAuctioneers.com for a complete listing and sale order. Make plans to attend this auction now.
Mr. Chairman, as a corn root, I speak for millions of my kind who can't be here to defend themselves. Pests are stalking our stocks and undermining our roots. Yes. But we can elect to protect with a legacy of strength. Poncho Votivo 2.0 seed treatment system increases nearby microbial activity to help us grow stronger. That's smart. Ladies and gentlemen, please, this is a corn roots movement. Ask your BASF seed advisor about Poncho Votivo 2.0 seed treatment. Always read and follow label directions.
Find it now at shopfarmjournal.com. Brand new to the shop is the best of tractor tales, as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This two DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, the best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at shopfarmjournal.com or call toll-free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at shopfarmjournal.com.
This just in from the front lines of the fight against tough weeds in soybean fields. Growers have taken the next step with the ultimate secret weapon. Fierce brand herbicides from Valent USA. These pre-emergence herbicides protect soybean fields with multiple effective modes of action, residual control that lasts up to 8 weeks, and fierce resistance management to help you win the battle against resistant weeds and the war. Ask your retailer or visit valent.com/fierce to learn more. Always read and follow label instructions.
You can't see them, but they're coming for your soybeans. Pythium, Phytophthora, and soybean cyst nematodes are serious threats, and they require serious seed protection. Valent USA has developed a 1-2-punch defense so growers can take the next step in soybean protection. Intego Sweet Soybeans has four powerful modes of action against insects and diseases that work in tandem with Aveo EZ nematicide to stop soybean pests and diseases before they strike. Find out more at soybeanprotection.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
In the morning, you're coffeed up and you're thinking. In the afternoon, you've calmed down, but you're still thinking.
We're here all day. AgriTalk.
We are here all day. Tyne Morgan filling in for Chip Flory and I believe Davis Michelson.
And we appreciate you taking the time. You don't have time to fiddle around with our goofy little radio show. This is really great. Thank you very much.
This is a treat. Chip doesn't always ask me, so it's a treat.
Hey, shameless plug, and I just retweeted it too. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We love it when Bubba's on the show. I will be out on Thursday, but the afternoon show, Todd will be all by himself. All by himself for the entire hour. He's asking for your phone calls, for your questions.
You think that's a good idea? You're comfortable with this?
I think it's a great idea. As long as, if I'm out of the office, what a great idea. As long as I'm not there to deal with the fallout, it's great. No, he's wonderful. Todd has a market perspective that is shared by no one that I know, and he's always worth a listen. You never know what he's going to say, but it's always good stuff. So,
yeah, well, we're excited to have Darren Hudson on with us today.
Absolutely.
Texas Tech University. We talk to him every year when we're on the College Road Show, but he just does have a unique perspective and so much going on with China right now. We wanted to bring him on. Darren, how is that weather in Texas and is specifically Lubbock?
It's better than it is north of here. it's cool, but we're not under a bunch of snow, so I think we're okay.
Yeah, have the students gone home for the holidays yet?
They did. It's that Lubbock has emptied out. Traffic is good. You can get into a restaurant. Everything's great.
Don't talk to me about traffic in Lubbock, Texas. I don't even want to hear it. The worst traffic is probably when you guys have like a haboob that comes through and then it stops traffic. I mean, that would be the only traffic jam I would see go on in Lubbock.
Yeah, well, we don't have the rush hour. We have the rush 15 minutes, so it's that 15 minutes is brutal, but it only lasts about 15 minutes.
I think Davis can relate.
Did you say haboob? I don't know what that is. Is that a Texas thing?
Are you for real?
Yeah.
Seriously.
No, seriously.
You have got to get out of Iowa, Darren.
I'm gonna Google it.
You can Google it, but it's a dust storm. It's this wall of wind that comes through. And, I mean, it literally looks like a wall of darkness that hits you. And have you had a couple this year already, Darren?
We had a couple of pretty dusty days this fall. Especially here in November and December, we've been on the tail end of those big fronts that have dumped a lot of snow in the north. And it's sort of at the tail end of the season, and the wheat wasn't up good, and the grass cover was gone, and the cotton was out, and so it picked up what was left, and here we go. It doesn't normally happen this time of year, but we've had a couple of pretty good dust storms. Most of those occur in April.
Rattlesnakes, scorpions, and now haboobs.
Why wouldn't you want to live in Lubbock?
It's a tough sell.
Why wouldn't you
want to
live in Lubbock? But Davis, what I found interesting this year, and a lot of farmers in West Texas and the Panhandle had to deal with this, but when one of the haboobs came in this spring, one farmer I talked to lost about 30% of his crop due to static electricity from that dust storm.
Jeez, wow.
Yeah,
I suppose from the particles hitting each other type of deal.
Yeah, so what, Darren, what causes that? Because that was a big issue, and I know that really hurt the cotton crop and got the cotton crop off to a tough start this year.
Yeah, it is largely static electricity, and it is dust blowing around, but it gets so much that it will damage those plants. And the other thing that happens is that sand gets blowing really fast right along the surface of the ground, and it literally just saws off the plants right there. It's like a, sandblasted. And so it strips them clean, and then there's nothing left for photosynthesis. So it just dies, and they have to go back and replant it. So it is a problem. And that's, it's always fascinating because you'll see, we'll have a 2 or 3 inch rain, and the next day the farmers are out in the field with their sand fighters trying to turn that sand back into the ground before the front picks it up, and then we have a dust storm.
Darren, I'm just waiting to get a call from Texas, or specifically Lubbock's Chamber of Commerce. asking me to change the words I use to describe Lubbock, because I don't think anybody's jumping online right now booking their winter vacation in Lubbock, Texas.
No, based on
our description.
But just remember, when you know, if you're in North Dakota and you know it snowed and it doesn't go away until April, we might see a little bit of snow this, you know, this winter, and that'll be it. Most of the time, we're in the 50s and 60s. So that's Chamber of Commerce weather right there.
Well, it isn't easy farming there. And we know when you look at some of the MFP payments that came this year, some counties surrounding Lubbock and some of those areas, Darren, receiving the maximum payment when it comes to MFP this year. Why was that needed? Why is that market struggling right now?
Well, and I think, you know, the story on the MFP was cotton was a second stage problem. You know, the first stage problem, obviously, everybody kind of got hit when we put the tariffs on, but soybeans, you know, just took it, you know, square on the chin. And what happened was that, you know, as that revenue dropped in soybeans the following year, especially in the Mid-South, Southeast, where farmers grew soybeans to begin with, they rotated over to cotton. And so, you know, we were somewhere around 80 cents, you know, early in this last season. And by the time we get to the end, we're down to 60, you know, 60 cents. So, you know, a huge percentage drop, and that, you know, that gets reflected in those MFP payments. So those counties that were very heavy cotton base, you know, picked up near those max payments. And you know, that was really what we were seeing was that second round effect. And I know a lot of people around the country are like, why are the cotton people, you know, getting this year? And it was really just because of formulaically it, you know, the impacts on cotton fell in second year, not in the first year.
But Darren, do you think it was solely China driving that? I mean, when you look at soybeans right now, a lot of economists arguing, okay, is it truly the lack of trade we're having with China because of the trade war, or is it more of a demand issue because of African swine fever and those other factors? But when it comes to cotton, can you solely say it was the trade war hurting prices?
Well, there are demand issues in cotton, I think, not in the same way there is for soybeans, because it's not tied to that. It's more general economic growth and things like that. So there were some demand issues, some weaknesses that existed in the market. The trade impacts just serve to really accelerate and exacerbate any of the effects that were already sort of underlying in that market. So, you know, you can't go back and say 100% of that price drop was a result of that, but certainly, you know, a big piece of that, especially in year two, was an indirect effect of the trade impacts on soybeans. So, yeah, you get sort of the first round, we got a little bit of weakness in price in year one that was, part of it was due to the trade, part of it was due to just general demand weakness. But the second year effect, almost 100% of that has come from, you know, added acres that wouldn't have been there without the trade war effects on beans and corn and other crops.
Yeah, from a production standpoint, though, this year,
right.
I mean, I know it hasn't been great every year. How do we stand on an output standpoint?
We're weak. Yields are, you know, way lower than what we would have anticipated or hoped for, way below trend. You know, just like the other crops, we had a lot of difficulties at the beginning of the season getting crops in, wetness, you know, things like that. But then, you know, what happens, we had this wetness here especially on the South Plains. People got their crop in. It looked like it was going to be, you know, really gangbusters. And then it just quit raining and it got hot. And, you know, we didn't have rain until they didn't need it anymore when it was time for harvest. You know, just like the Midwest kind of got the snow when they didn't need it. And so it's really hurt the yields. But more importantly, I think for cotton was the quality dropped off significantly. You know, a lot of shorter staple cotton, things that just a lot less valuable out in the marketplace in general, on top of the lower sort of base prices that we were, you know, working with. So Yeah, production-wise, it wasn't a great year. It wasn't catastrophic. It certainly wasn't a 2011. There were producers, really bright spots out there with some really great production. But, you know, by and large, across the entire area, it was much more disappointing than it looked to be when we sort of started the season out.
Well, Joe Vaklovic of Standard Grain was just on, and he said, you know, I really don't think the markets are acting like we have a trade deal. I mean, he thinks that the markets would be responding much more favorably. Yes, we've seen some green, but he does not think that really we're seeing what we would have seen if there was actually a trade deal. So when we come back with Darren Hudson, does he think, from an economist standpoint, that the market is acting like we actually have a trade deal? And what could this trade deal and this $40 billion, this elusive $40 billion, what could that actually consist of as far as ag goods go? We'll ask Darren Hudson when we come back on AgriTalk PM.
Pivot BioProven is the first ever nitrogen-producing microbe that supplies nitrogen directly to the plant, helping maximize yield. Just ask Zach from Oklahoma.
The average was about a 5 to 6 bushel an acre benefit. Not only is that more money in my pocket, but it's less money I had to spend on fertilizer and wear and tear on my side dressing sprayer.
Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for. The nitrogen that stays put, whether or not.
Commodity Classic is a great place to recharge your batteries, to reconnect with why you started farming in the first place, and why you can't imagine doing anything else. You'll be among thousands of farmers who share your thirst for knowledge and your passion for agriculture. Commodity Classic is a positive, uplifting, and inspiring environment, one that will keep you fired up when you head back home. See your future clearly, Thursday, February 27th through Saturday, February 29th in San Antonio. Visit CommodityClassic.com.
Time now for AgriTalk's Tech Talk. Joining us now, Dan Vaught, ProFarmer Senior Economist. Dan, what market are you looking at today?
Hey, Davis, I'm looking at February gold futures today. The gold market rallied strongly amidst U.S.-China trade war last summer, with the February future climbing from around $1,300 per ounce to an August high of $1,571.70. It's been sliding since then, with a failure at trendline resistance triggering a secondary drop last month. It's found solid support around $1,460 lately, but hasn't been able to close above its 40-day moving average despite repeated attempts. In fact, while a bullish breakout is quite possible, the 40-day MA at $1,483 is backed by the downtrend line around $1,490. And the psychologically important $1,500 level. With U.S. and China seeming ready to bury the tariff hatchet, gold looks vulnerable to further losses this winter.
All right. Thanks, Dan. That's ProFarmer economist Dan Vaught. You can get more of Dan's work at ProFarmer.com.
Hi, I'm Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths, and I invite you to join me each morning as we cover the nation's food system, from fields of green to orchards of orange and livestock everywhere in between. America runs on agriculture, and here at Ag Day, agriculture's what we do best. Listen as our analysts track the markets, learn about innovations in technology and sustainability, and live the country lifestyle through the eyes of rural America. Join me, Clinton Griffiths, for Ag Day, the country experience.
Sweet strawberry icing.
You're in Goodwill and just past that vintage denim jacket you spot. Miniature donut earrings. You lean in. Ah, that's the scent of shopping success. Because at Goodwill, every item you buy funds local job training and more. So bring home those donut earrings and bring home so much good to your community. Goodwill. Bring good home. Brought to you by Goodwill and the Ad Council.
5 conferences, 1 location, something for your entire team. Get ready. The 2020 Top Producer Summit is set for January 27th through the 30th in Chicago. This year's summit is a combination of the 5 highly regarded top producer conferences: Top Producer Seminar, Executive Women in Agriculture, Tomorrow's Top Producer, Farm Journal Legacy Project, and, for the first time, the Farm Journal Hemp Summit. Register today for Top Producer Summit at tpsummit.com.
I'm Andrew McRae, your host for Farming the Countryside. We're talking about issues, tips, and trends affecting rural and agricultural America.
Then it was a burden on the local office. Essentially, you just have our county right now, or PLC.
On each show, I talk with guests who provide the latest info on important topics and the challenges and successes on their own operations.
We had an open house and invited the entire community. It was a huge event. We had about 750 people show up.
The Farming the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Nutrien Ag Solutions, the world's largest provider of crop inputs and services.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Welcome back to AgriTalk this afternoon. Our guest is Darren Hudson. Before we dive back into our conversation about China, the hot button topic that seems like it's been all year, but heating up, as Jim Wiesmeyer keeps saying, this could be a December to remember, and it definitely could be. But it looks like this Tuesday, we were not really that hot, Davis, and then prices heated up. Give us a recap of the news. Really, what went on today in these markets?
Absolutely. Well, March hard red futures were a nickel higher at 467. March soft red futures up 6.5, 556.25. March corn futures 2 cents higher, 390. May corn gained 1¢ to 396.5. January bean futures 6¾ higher, 928¾. November 2020 beans closed at 966.5, up 4 cents on the day. And my quote screen is still wacky. Boy, I went into full Barbara Walters mode there. My quote screen is still wacky, but we've got December live cattle down 7.5, 122.22.5. Feb contract down 95 cents, 126.30. Jan feeders down a dime, 145.15 today. And February lean hogs off 65 cents, 69.85. There's your quick market recap. Back to you, Tyne.
Thanks, Davis. Yeah. Darren Hudson of Texas Tech University rejoining us now. Darren, when you hear those markets, I mean, we were not green all across the board. Joe Vaclavic earlier in the show said he doesn't think the markets are acting like we have a trade deal. Do you agree with that? Do you think that's the sentiment of the market right now?
It certainly, when you look at where prices are and where they have been, it's almost like the market's going, I'll believe it when I see it. Some of the discussion earlier about maybe some of the funds are positioning themselves for, you know, an uptick. They're afraid of being short, if something does happen. But, you know, the reality is at this point, nobody knows what's in the deal. I mean, you know, there's talk about what they may do. There's no real sort of formal commitment that says they're going to buy these things. I mean, you know, and I understand the Chinese, they don't want to be caught buying something that's at its highest possible price if they don't need it. But obviously, they're going to have to buy some things. But, you know, we do have a couple of factors, I think, that sort of weigh on us. With the beans, for example, it certainly, you know, the swine fever issue, you know, it's really put a damper on the demand side, which means even in a world where we don't have tariffs, the Chinese just don't need as many soybeans at the moment. So, you know, I think the market's sort of looking at that rationally. But overall, you know, I just think that, you know, 68 cent cotton, you know, you're talking about hogs even being off. I was looking at ethanol a minute ago. Ethanol's down. Fractionally, but it's down, even with talk of the Chinese stepping in and buying some ethanol. But so I think the market's kind of, it seems to be taking a wait and see attitude about where the details may shake out, because it we got to translate the deal there. You know, there's, we still got to talk about what commodities might be in play here. That's kind of the problem. And the number is just a huge number. It's almost like people are look at it and go, I'm not sure that I believe that.
Well, Darren, in the context of the expectations, let's just pull out the low end estimate of $40 billion in ag goods. I almost kind of have it in the back of my head now that anything short of that could be actually a detriment to the market. You know, we've seen sales of 2 million plus metric tons of beans sold at a time, and that should give the market some real excitement. But if the market is saying, well, yeah, that's great, but it ain't 40 billion, Are we in for some disappointment in the marketplace here as we expect that number? Are we actually hamstringing ourselves putting a number on it like that?
Well, I do think the number gets hung in people's mind. And mm-hmm. the important thing to remember is that what we're talking about is dollar value. Mm-hmm. So it's not volume, it's dollar value.
Right.
So, you know, if I'm – just put it this way. If I'm the Chinese and I've committed to buying $40 billion, I'm going to buy a whole lot of beef and almonds. Mm. You know, mm-hmm. Why? Because that requires the least amount of product coming into my market, distorting my local market, but has high value. And mm-hmm. so, you know, that $40 billion, you know, if you're talking about $40 billion of the soybeans or some fraction of that,
right?
I mean, you're crazy. It's just not going to happen. And you have to remember that the year with the highest dollar value of exports, I think, was 2012. It was like $28 billion to the mm-hmm. Chinese. Mm-hmm. And now they're talking about $40 billion in a year with targets of moving towards $50 billion.
Right.
Well, that's a lot of product. Mm-hmm. You know, of course, I've joked, nothing stops them from buying it in the port of Los Angeles and selling it in the port of Los Angeles, but
right.
you know, to somebody else at a loss, and you know, say, oh well, we've met our commitment. But you know, I do think the market's got to sort through how the sort of the dynamics of what's likely to be shipped. And I think I've heard Tyne say this, you know, in the last day or so is mm-hmm. oh, you know, beef, pork, some of those things are in play. And that would make sense because they're higher valued.
Okay.
And so it doesn't take as much to move that direction, but certainly not, you know, I don't, you know, the soybean market is going to have, there's a demand side problem that the Chinese have to sort through before
right.
they can even rationalize the amount of yeah. soybeans to bring in.
And that's something that we've discussed here in previous episodes of the show is that, hey, look, China's going to buy what they need when they need. Let's not fiddle with the free market here. You know, maybe our
right.
expectation should just be to get back to where we were before all this started and let the market sort it out rather than putting these artificial, you know, sort of guideposts in our future.
Yeah, I think that's a more realistic approach. I mean, everybody wants to attach a number.
Yeah.
And in many ways, the people, you know, are wanting this deal to sort of bail out agriculture, you know, kind of thing. But I think what's more realistic for us is, you know, the patient market development, get these tariffs off, and then let the Chinese want our stuff. They want our cotton. They want our soybeans. They want our beef. They want those things. But they're gonna buy it when it's rational for them to buy it, and that's okay. But we certainly want them to not be strategically not buying from us or placing tariffs on it,
right?
You
right.
know, to make it more expensive. And if this gets us to that point, I think we're much better off than we were 6 months ago.
Right.
But Darren, I have some analysts that argue, you know what, we were losing market share in China. We were seeing China
right.
purposely go to other countries. We were losing market share. The time was now to kind of hold China's feet to the fire because they were, as we saw, like with sorghum and other markets, they were manipulating our markets when you look at DDGs. So, you know, some analysts are saying this was needed. We were losing market share. And if we didn't do something, it was going to go in the opposite direction quickly. Do you think that's a valid point?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, and I think even from a broader perspective, you know, the intellectual property and all those sorts of things. The Chinese have been in constant, egregious violation of their WTO commitments,
yeah.
and to that extent, the Trump administration is the first administration, at least, you know, in this context, to stand up to the Chinese and say, okay, we're going to draw the line in the sand, and here we're going to go. And I do think it's damaged the Chinese. I think they realized at this point that there's no way out. They can't buy enough ag product from other countries to fill their needs and leave the U.S. out of that mix. They're going to have to deal with the U.S. Mm-hmm. And if it forces them to, you know, to rationalize some of these policies and, you know, begins to hold them to account and behave like a, you know, a normal member of the trading community, then it will have been, you know, a very important outcome from this trade dispute. You know, it's just the question is, I think a lot of people thought what was going to happen is what we were going to have this dispute, and at the end of it, the Chinese were going to buy a ton more U.S. Right. product. And I just don't know that market was there ever for that. But if it forces them to get their fiscal house in order. I mean, you know, the thing is, corn, for example, you know, the Chinese are subsidizing domestic corn production at five times their de minimis, you know, level that they agreed to in the WTO. You know, we won the case on the small grains already. So I think...
Oh, did we lose him?
I think we might have lost him. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we lost him.
Interesting to bring the WTO in on that. We know that President Trump is no fan of the World Trade Organization. And I can't help but wonder if we had laid this at the, put this on the WTO to handle it on our behalf. And while he did say we've won a small victory on the small grains, but if the World Trade Organization would have been able to deal with this, number one, in a timely fashion, and number two, in a way that would be more beneficial for the American farmer than right. the way we're going about it now.
I think he's – Darren, are you back on?
Uh-oh.
Nope, not yet. But my next question for him was, I mean, does the – you know, he mentioned the WTO, but we've heard this administration's stance on the WTO, so does the WTO even matter? Darren, right. are you on?
Yeah, I am back on. You know, they tell you these internet phones never fail.
Well, I just thought maybe it was the Chinese.
Well, it could have been. They may be listening in and cut us off. But
yeah, they didn't. But, I thought, wow, they did not like what Darren had to say. That is pretty
Beijing.
Obvious.
Well, I will say I was in China this summer and they didn't arrest me, so I'm okay. I must not be saying anything that important.
Close call.
But your phone is obviously tapped. Anyway, all right, Darren, you're going to be back with us. We have to take a short break. But when we come back. Hang on, because we have a couple questions before we get into the tweet of the day.
Save time and capitalize on market opportunities with Pro Farmer's Daily Advice Monitor. Whether on your desktop or on your phone, visit tryprofarmer.com and get a generous 1 month free trial. Pro Farmer only focuses on the news that impacts the market, so you won't scroll through pages of articles to find what's really impacting your business. Plus, get full access to cash bids, charting tools, and more. Visit tryprofarmer.com right now. That's tryprofarmer.com.
In today's uncertain ag environment, it can be easy to lose your focus. At Commodity Classic, you can sharpen your vision for the future of your farm with insight from well-known thought leaders in agriculture, eye-opening innovation and technology, and the sheer energy of being around thousands of positive, talented farmers. There's no doubt, the 2020 Commodity Classic will help you see your future clearly. Plan now to be in San Antonio, February 27th through 29th. Visit CommodityClassic.com.
I'm Zach Johnson, a row crop farmer in Minnesota.
And I'm Mitchell Hora, a farmer in Iowa.
Agriculture has to feed a growing population, and many people want us to pull that off without messing up the environment. So how do we do that?
We're trying to figure that out on our podcast, Fieldwork. Check us out on the AgriTalk app and learn more at fieldworktalk.org.
Hey, Jim, how would you describe our D.C. Signal to Noise podcast?
It's a dairy parlor analysis of the D.C. politics that impact America's farmers and ranchers.
Dairy parlor analysis? What do you mean?
No bull.
Download the D.C. Signal to Noise podcast with Jim Wiesmeyer and me, John Harith, every Friday on agweb.com, the AgriTalk app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brett Lowry is from Searsboro, Iowa.
We got off a rough start this season, long spring. We started planting the third week of April, and we finished planting the 10th of June, I think. So far, we've had plenty of moisture here in September, pretty well good for the year. The crop looks better than expected. Hopefully some more heat to keep pushing this crop along as quick as we can get it. We're going to be a couple weeks later than normal starting. We hope to get going by the 1st of October. I haven't seen any SDS in our own fields. I've seen some neighboring fields that have SDS. I suspect that some of them didn't get a levo, and that's why we're seeing the SDS more prevalent in those fields. You can definitely see the beans that were not treated with a levo. There's some sudden death that showed up as we got into August and September. The fields that had a levo are definitely much better shape on sudden death than the fields that were not treated with a levo. I'm sure glad that we've got a levo on all our soybeans.
BASF, we create chemistry. Always read and follow label directions. A levo is a registered trademark of BASF. All rights reserved.
Soil needs plants to stay healthy, just like plants need soil to survive. Nature thrives on forming connections. Farmers thrive on forming them too. With Indigo Marketplace, we're setting out to connect every farmer with every buyer, making it easier to find a market for the things that make your farm unique. Visit indigoag.com/questions to find out more. Indigo. From questions, we grow.
Sullivan Auctioneers is holding their annual year-end no-reserve dealer and farmer auction Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, December 19th, 20th, and 21st in Hamilton, Illinois. It all starts at 9 a.m. each day. This is one of the largest and highest quality auctions they've ever conducted, with over 50 combines, 60 tractors, planters, sprayers, tillage equipment, hay equipment, construction equipment, and much more. No on-site buyer's premium. Live internet bidding is available on all major items, and every item sells absolute with no reserve. Go to sullivanauctioneers.com for a complete listing and sale order. Make plans to attend this auction now.
Mr. Chairman, as a corn root, I speak for millions of my kind who can't be here to defend themselves. Pests are stalking our stocks and undermining our roots. Yes. But we can elect to protect with a legacy of strength. Ponchovotivo 2.0 seed treatment system increases nearby microbial activity to help us grow stronger. That's smart. Ladies and gentlemen, please, this is a corn roots movement. Ask your BASF seed advisor about Ponchovotivo 2.0 seed treatment. Always read and follow label directions.
Machinery Pete's having a year-end unreserved online dealer auction in conjunction with Big Iron. Visit machinerypete.com/auction to start your bidding now. Check out a variety of equipment from dealers across the country at machinerypete.com. Everything sells to the highest bidder, absolute. This is one auction you can't miss. Items are open for bidding now. Items close December 27th. Go to machinerypete.com/auction. Unreserved, no buyer's fees. Start bidding now. machinerypete.com/auction.
AgriTalk, where we solemnly vow no Nickelback. Oops, check that. Only some Nickelback on AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk on this Tuesday, closing out our discussion with Darren Hudson. Darren, you know, we talk about this elusive $40 billion, $50 billion, whatever it is that China supposedly promised to buy. From an economist's perspective, is that possible?
It's possible, but it is a stretch. I mean, it certainly, I mean, you have to imagine that anytime if they're buying in that kind of volume, it's going to have huge impacts on prices. And, you know, for our producers, they would love that for sure. But it's a stretch to think of $40 billion when $28 billion was the previous high. That's an extra $10 billion in a year. It can be done by buying higher valued goods, but, you know, it's certainly going to push them to get to that level if that's the real target.
Okay. I mean, you said it could be higher value goods, and it seems like there's promising steps, Darren, with we're hearing rumors that they're pricing wheat, that they're shopping for ethanol, that they're looking at prices right now to see what would be feasible and what they could, you know, what makes sense for them to buy right now. I mean, this all seems promising, something that we didn't hear when we thought we had this phase one trade deal before.
Right. No, And the, you know, the economics are in the favor of them buying a lot of those products. I mean, I think for them buying U.S. ethanol makes sense. For them buying U.S. wheat makes sense. It's a lower cost for them to come into our market and buy those things. I think they're going to buy some cotton, or at least keep what they've got contracted, which is actually, you know, they bought quite a bit of cotton this year. So I think there's a lot of things that you know certainly play in favor of seeing a much bigger export number to China over the next 12 months. I just, you know, I don't know if we'll reach 40 billion, but look, if we reach 28 billion, that's a big year. If we, you know, if we reach 35 billion, that's a big year. So, you know, we don't want to sort of look the gift horse in the mouth, so to speak. I don't think that's what we want to do, but I do think we want to, you know, just be realistic and temper the expectations. But But certainly them shopping in those higher valued product categories is one way that they're going to up that number.
And if this comes to fruition, if this is a reality and we actually see them follow through on some of this, I mean, how does that change the mood in the new year?
Well, it's going to make a lot of traders and a lot of producers very happy. And, you know, the quicker they get into that market, the better it will be for, you know, U.S. producers. Obviously, they're buying stuff out of that market, you know, moving that product out. But listen, if we get any upward price pressure on a lot of these things because of activity, because of China, you know, it helps with insurance prices. It helps with, you know, the planning process, forward pricing, all those things that are going to happen, need to happen over the next few months as producers get ready to get financing and get in, you know, get their seed and their inputs bought for the next growing season. So, you know, the quicker the Chinese move on that, the quicker we move forward with that deal, the better off we'll be. And I hope that's the signal that gets sent to that market is, you know, that some added revenue for those producers.
Right. Darren, if we can hop to the theoretical for just a second, do you mind?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead.
I've kind of tossed around the idea that maybe China's just waiting to see if Trump doesn't get reelected or booted out by the American voter in 2020. Number one, is it possible they're just dinking around with us right now on this phase one deal to see how the election shakes out? And number two, are they willing to keep dinking around for another 4 years to see how the 2024 election shakes out?
Well, the Chinese are much more likely to play the long game than we are.
Yes.
You know, there's been talk about them, you know, setting this out and stretching it out and seeing what's the sort of the temperature in the country as we move closer towards an election. But at the same time, they're under their own pressure. I mean, they've got debt issues. Mm. They've got other issues that they're having to deal with economically, and they need, you know, they need to get some of these markets back where they had them, because they were not and are not prepared to, you know, ship a lot of those products around the world. Nobody's interested in buying them. So I think, you know, this thing had its economic toll on them. They're definitely interested in trying to get something done. Okay. But they're not nearly in as much a hurry as the Trump administration is, because they need something going into an election. But they don't have to worry about it. I mean, you know, it's not like President Xi has to worry about an election in ever. So, you know, he's golden, you know, but there's only so much they can do. They can't push it forever, but it is, they do have a little bit more flex than we do.
Yeah.
All right. Darren, anything you want to leave us with? I mean, what a year of uncertainty, and then look what supposedly is getting done in December. I mean, it all came down to this, right? And we thought we had the deadline, what was it, at the end of last spring, and then we thought we had another there's all these deadlines that seem to keep getting pushed back. It's been a mentally exhausting year when you're following this trade war, but what do you want to leave us with?
Well, I think one of the two things that I've sort of been telling producer groups of late is, one, don't watch the news every day, because this thing is going to go back and forth for a little while as we, you know, sort of shake the details out. And number two, you know, I think the deal is a good deal. We need this deal in agriculture. We need it to move forward. And hopefully what that's going to do is bring a little certainty into those markets going forward, which help those producers plan for the next, you know, the next six to 8 months.
Yeah. Darren, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thanks. Appreciate you having me.
Thanks, Darren.
All right. Do we have time for Tweet of the Day?
Absolutely we do. Today's tweets are funny and not funny at the same time. I guess it's one of those if we didn't laugh, we'd cry type of deals. And now today's tweets at DFavor84. My daughter needed to bring something red to class, so I gave her a cash flow statement. Run for fun, 1555, 575. I think the Russians have hacked my phone. We were just talking about this. Every time I order groceries online, some guy just drops them off in the middle of the night and speeds away.
Well, tell him not to call AgriTalk and talk about China. Don't
finally,
do that either.
At Silence Chopper. Funny how you can spot a sick calf 100 yards away at 65 miles per hour on somebody else's place, but miss seeing your own from the feed truck. You know, it's funny, but not really funny. Ha ha. It's a fine
line. Speaking of humor, Peter Meyer's joining us tomorrow.
Oh, that's going to be outstanding.
Yeah. Pete's going to join us usually bluntly. Will tell us really what's going on in the market, and he has some inside knowledge of kind of the ethanol market. And then Clinton Griffiths will be hosting AgriTalk tomorrow morning.
The hot steppa himself.
He'll be back in business.
Your enthusiasm for that is underwhelming, Ty.
All right, Davis, I'll talk to you tomorrow afternoon.
Right on.
That does it for this Tuesday.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
5 conferences, 1 location, something for your entire team. Get ready. The 2020 Top Producer Summit is set for January 27th through the 30th in Chicago. This year's summit is a combination of the 5 highly regarded top producer conferences, Top Producer Seminar, Executive Women in Agriculture, Tomorrow's Top Producer, Farm Journal Legacy Project, and, for the first time, the Farm Journal Hemp Summit. Register today for Top Producer Summit at tpsummit.com.
Thanks to Acuron Corn Herbicide for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your retailer about how you can get 5 to 15 more bushels with Acuron. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials.